The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
The 1921 partition of Ireland was directly responsible for hundreds of deaths and injuries on both sides. In a new book, Birth of the Border, Dublin-based historian Cormac Moore looks at not only the political implications of the border, but also how it affected day-to-day life. And Cormac is with me in the studio. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I'm going to just play something I played at the very beginning of the show, and it's from an eight-minute piece which was done for television by Stephen Ray. And this one opened. Opening phrase says it all.
Jacob Rees-Mogg, you're right. You don't need to visit the north of Ireland to understand the border. You need to have lived here.
And he has a point. Because the reality of the border is only most palpable to those who actually live on either side of it.
Yeah, particularly at the border counties, but also obviously in the, you know, the six counties in Belfast. Belfast is and all parts of Northern Ireland. But I would also claim, and do claim this book, it affects the whole island and has affected the whole island. I would contest that it probably is the strongest legacy issue of the whole decade of commemorations, the partition of Ireland. More so than the Easter Rising, perhaps.
Now, I want to go back. We always think of the War of Independence and how that gave rise to the treaty, the border and so on. Yeah. But even before that, there was going to be a border.
Yes, the Irish question had dominated British politics for decades, ever since Gladstone converted to Home Rule in the 1880s. And it became the Irish question became the Ulster question, really, with the 1912 Home Rule crisis. And the very violent and angry opposition from Ulster Unionists and their support from the Conservative Party, who were willing to break the law on behalf of Ulster Unionists, and plus the lukewarm support of the Liberal Party for Home Rule, meant there was going to have to be something done for Ulster.
So there was going to be some sort of parliament in Belfast.
No, not a parliament.
A what? An assembly?
No. That was never really talked about until 1919. It was talking about exclusion from Dublin Parliament. So what was talked about was that either all of Ulster or some of Ulster would be fully within Westminster, and
okay.
The rest of Ireland.
So what we would know today by the term direct rule. In other words, there'd be no one locally running the show.
Yeah,
it would be run from Westminster.
It would be run from Westminster, but they'd have a lot more seats in Parliament than they've had since 1921. They've only had 12, and now they've obviously 18, but they had 12 in 1921, but it was envisaged they would have retain all of their seats in Westminster, so they'd be a fully fledged part of the United Kingdom
now,
instead of having a devolved government.
That border, how developed did it become in terms of where it would actually run from and to, the 1919 one?
Well, so before that, again, before the war, the First World War, Augustine Birrell, he was the Chief Secretary of Ireland, he and a few people within the British administration in Dublin Castle looked at what is the best border to have. And they looked at the 1911 census, which were the best figures. So they were looking at Catholic and non-Catholic areas. And they were talking about either having a border based on county basis or on poor law unions or on rural districts.
And were they going to gerrymander it? I mean, was that the idea that they would make sure that they always had a kind of a unionist majority in every single area of this territory?
Yeah, that was probably the thing, because nationalists didn't want to be excluded from Home Rule, and unionists did not want to be part of a Home Rule solution. Now, there was a lot of unionist opposition to exclusion as well in the south, and from counties in Ulster that may have been excluded, because they didn't want to be, you know, left by themselves in a Catholic state, as they would have described it. So it was very confusing, and ultimately it was decided, look, for administration point of view, from ease, let's just do it on a county basis. Now, when the actual Walter Long Committee convened in 1919, and it was the one that came up with the idea to have a Home Rule Parliament for Belfast, as well as the three sovereign provinces, it wanted it for the nine counties of Ulster, because that... Its public argument was this would actually lead to unity eventually. Now, Ulster unions did not want unity. They wanted the furthest thing away from it. And they did not want nine counties, because they felt they would be outbred by Catholics. So they insisted on six counties of Ulster, Antrim, Armagh, Down, Derry, Fermanagh and Tyrone. And that caused huge disgruntlement amongst Ulster unionists from Donegal Monaghan and Cavan, who left the Ulster Unionist Council in big numbers then.
So that was the proposal then. Then we had the War of Independence, and then we had...
Well, the War of Independence was happening while this was happening.
Yeah. So we end up, though, with a border commission afterwards.
A boundary commission.
How did they actually go about drawing? Because when you look at it today, even, there are all sorts of anomalies.
Well, it hasn't changed. It actually hasn't changed from the Government of Ireland Act. It's on the county basis. So it's wherever the dividing line is of Monaghan, Fermanagh, of Cavan or Armagh, it's the same as it was, you know. But the Boundary Commission, that was what Sinn Féin believed when they negotiated the treaty. They believed this was going to bring back huge tracts of land back to the Free State. They were going to get definitely Tyrone and Fermanagh, because the majority of citizens there were Catholic, and definitely Derry City, and Newry, all of South Down, South Armagh. They honestly believed, naively, and this was not just on a pro-treaty side, but anti-treaty side as well, believed that they were going to get huge tracts back. But events overtook circumstances, and the actual Boundary Commission didn't meet until 1924.
And things were kind of settled at that stage. Well, that they didn't want to come back?
Well, the Irish Free State, to be fair to the Irish Free State, even though they met an absolute hames of the Boundary Commission, they did want tracts of land and huge parts of Northern Ireland to come back to the Free State. But their fatal flaw was the original agreeing to a boundary commission that was so vague. There was no plebiscite asked for. They should have asked for a plebiscite they would have got Tyrone and Fermanagh back. I firmly believe that if Sinn Féin had played their cards right, they should have been able to get Tyrone and Fermanagh back. Because the British government knew they were very weak on Ulster. Because there was no moral grounding, particularly for Tyrone and Fermanagh, where the majority of citizens did not want to be part of Northern Ireland.
So, in short, what went wrong?
Well, first of all, they agreed to a boundary commission, which very vaguely stated it would be determined based on population, economics and geography. That can mean anything.
Yeah.
No plebiscite would have asked for. They agreed to a three-person committee, one from the Irish Free State, one from the Northern Ireland and one from British government. That's 2-1, really, which it turned out to be.
Now, the working of the border when it was set up, now we know with tariffs and all the rest of it in later years, there were customs posts and all the rest of it. In the early years of the border, was it kind of seamless, frictionless?
Well, the violence didn't help, particularly from the first 6 months of 1922. There was threats from the IRA going across the border. 1 in 6 Ulster Protestant men were actually armed. They were part of either specials or the RAC that became the RUC. So there was a lot of posts during early parts of 1922. But generally, in terms of day-to-day lives, it didn't really have the impact it would have from 1923 when the Irish Free State imposed customs barriers. And that's when the real tangible a border became real. It was no longer just an administrative burden. It actually became a very tangible, real form from 1923.
Now, when we had the economic war,
what
was the impact of the border on that?
Well, the economic war was very similar in terms of the 1923 customs barriers. It was just more customs barriers. So,
when people learned to smuggle?
Well, people were smuggling from 1923 onwards. See, farmers were allowed, they were given a lot of leeway. They could use unapproved routes. They were allowed to bring their own livestock. So there was mechanisms set in place almost by default that they could smuggle certain things. And it was ongoing from 1923 onwards. The 1932 kind of economic war was against Britain, really. What's often forgotten is that north-south trade has never been as much as east-west trade. And that's where the economic war really had a big impact.
Because the two economies were similar, kind of self-sufficient and exporting excess to the island of Britain.
Well, one of the reasons why the Free State government previous leaders of Sinn Féin, including Arthur Griffith, they believed they were way too dependent on the British. That's why they needed to have customs barriers, because they were totally dependent on the British system.
Be careful what you wish for.
And they were up until pretty much in
the book, and it's hugely informative and educational. But your thesis that you mentioned at the beginning, that it has affected the whole island, not just...
Yeah, it has. Of course it has. It's affected us all. It's been the biggest legacy issue of the decade of commemorations. It has stinted politics on both sides of the island for 100 years. But having said that, a lot of bodies, and as my book shows, is that a lot of bodies, a lot of organisations have ignored the border. It's a very unusual partition. It had most partitions. You look at Soviet Union, you look at Korea, you look at India. When those countries have been divided, every body and organisation generally within those countries divide also. But you look at most sporting bodies, they're all Ireland bodies. All the major religions, including the Protestant religions, where most members are based in the north, their machinery is primarily based in the South. They're all Ireland bodies. Same with trade unions, same with trade associations, charities. So it's a very unusual partition in that even though politically and security-wise there has been huge divisions, in other aspects there has been a lot of unity, including among unionist and Protestant groups.
And lastly, Brexit and the border. I mean, is Brexit going to be the thing that undoes the border ultimately?
Well, I definitely do think it accelerates it. People are saying the DUP made a mistake in backing Boris Johnson and shouldn't have trusted him, which they shouldn't have. But their fatal mistake was actually backing Brexit for a start, because it does break up potentially the United Kingdom. And we are looking at the real possibility of Scottish independence. Even you're hearing for the first time real strong calls for Welsh independence, which I haven't heard before.
No.
So you know, and Northern Ireland obviously is coming to play. But the demographics, even though unionists did not want to be outbred by nine counties of Ulster in 1921, it looks that way. The demographics are going a certain direction
as
well.
It'll be outbred by six.
It could well happen very soon, yes.
The Birth of the Border is the book. Its subtitle is The Impact of Partition in Ireland. It's published by Merrion and it's a brilliant book. Its author is Cormac Moore. And Cormac, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.